Hello and welcome to Inside Education. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. The programme's website is insideed.com, where you can listen to or download podcasts of all previous Inside Education programmes. In Irish education, the acronym DICE stands for Development and Intercultural Education. The DICE project recently held a workshop on photo voice, the use of documentary photography and storytelling. PhotoVoice is a research method developed in the early 1990s and used in the fields of community development, public health and education. The workshop was facilitated by Dr. Kevin Graziano, who is an associate professor in the teacher preparation program at Nevada State College in the United States. Dr. Graziano has received several teaching awards and has taught in the Czech Republic, South Africa and in Australia. I met up with Kevin Graziano during his visit to Ireland and I began by asking him to tell me what exactly is PhotoVoice.
PhotoVoice is a form of participatory action research that utilizes documentary photography and storytelling. And what it does is it entrusts cameras into the hands of typically oppressed or marginalized populations, and it allows them to define what is important, what needs to be changed, what should be remembered, things that perhaps we need to consider as outsiders, not part of an inside community. And what makes PhotoVoice so unique is the photographs produced and the stories told by participants themselves are brought forward to policymakers for change, for action. So unlike documentary photography that's been around for decades, where participants may or may not be involved with that action component at the end, that's what really separates PhotoVoice from traditional documentary photography. Participants are involved at every single level of the research process. And so that truly involves identifying problems from the onset, conceptualizing the problem, forming the research questions, collectively collecting data, analyzing data, and then disseminating the results. And it doesn't end with just analyzing and collecting data. They actually then go forward. They identify constituents. They identify allies, policymakers in the community to then bring about change.
Okay, so it really is about telling stories. Would that be right?
It is about telling stories. It's about storytelling, absolutely. Stories and the storytelling component of PhotoVoice is primary, and the photograph itself is indeed secondary. So yes, it's taking those stories, again, from individuals who typically are marginalized or oppressed, but it doesn't have to be. I've used it with in-service and pre-service teachers and regular individuals in the community who are not oppressed or marginalized. And yes, it's the storytelling. It's giving individuals an opportunity to claim or reclaim their voice and then, again, share it with a wider community.
When most people think of research, they think of maybe people in white coats in doing medical research, or maybe in education, you know, having group A and group B, and they're each given a different treatment. How does PhotoVoice fit into research in that sense of research?
Mm-hmm. Well, it is a form of participatory action research.
What is participatory action research?
And again, participatory action research, I kind of alluded to it earlier. It's a research process where individuals are engaged and involved in the research process from the very beginning, conceptualizing the problem, identifying issues, theories, concerns within a community, and they are involved throughout the entire research process, again, from collecting the data, analyzing the data, disseminating the results. So in a sense, your participants are viewed as co-researchers or co-developers, co-creators, if you would. So it being a form of participatory action research, we know that participatory action research and PhotoVoice in general are embedded in a theoretical framework that focuses around Paulo Freire's Education for Critical Consciousness. It also focuses on feminist theory and a documentary approach to participatory research. And all three of those theoretical frameworks, they all focus on representation and ownership of one's personal voice. So it's not simply shuffling around photographs photographs and telling stories, it is embedded in a theoretical foundation.
So what kind of questions then can be answered by a photo voice approach to research?
Well, typically what happens, Sean, is the researcher enters a community and becomes one of the community with the participants. So, for example, I conducted a photo voice study in South Africa, and I arrived in South Africa. And with most participatory action research studies, again, you want to become part of the community first. You want to think like they think, socialize like they socialize, eat like they socialize, eat like they eat, become familiar with their customs and their community, truly become one with the community. After doing so, you interact with them on a day-to-day basis. You have many dialogues. You reflect. You have conversations. You observe. And through those observations and dialogues and reflections, the problem surfaces. The issues, the theories, the concerns may surface. The insights that perhaps the community members would like to illuminate and bring forward for further exploration, further investigation. So one could enter into a participatory action research project without a hypothesis or without a research question up front, but one certainly can stem from, again, the initial entry into the community. And those questions can change. New questions may evolve. For example, when I went to South Africa, I relied on the literature to form my questions because I was not able to spend as much time as I would have liked to identify the problem and form the questions. But when I arrived, my participants had no idea what questions I was asking. So together, collectively, we had to sit down and actually rewrite the questions so that they understood what they were photographing.
So if we apply it then to education, can you give me an example of an underrepresented or a marginalized group in education that might be studied using the approach of photo voice?
Absolutely. I use photo voice as both a research methodology. Certainly it can be used for data collection, because if you think about it, photo voice is nothing more than a form of needs assessment. We're looking at the needs of a community and we're collecting those needs through photography and storytelling. Aside from collecting data and using it as a research methodology, it is a best practice. It is something that can be used in the classroom as a teaching tool, as a teaching strategy across disciplines. So one way that I use photo voice is with my undergraduate students. I teach second language acquisition courses back in the States in our teacher preparation program. And I require my students to identify an English language learner in our school district early on in the semester with my support and support from the district. They have to work 16 weeks the entire semester with this English language learner. And what I have them do is create a case study for their final project. Rather than take a traditional exam or write a traditional paper, they have to develop this case study. And part of the case study includes photo voice. My Nevada State College pre-service teacher, he has to borrow or rent a digital camera or buy a disposable camera, and they give it to the English language learner, who then has to document, this is the question or the assignment for the course, the English language learner has to document their everyday realities as an English language learner in our school district. And so they have 16 weeks to document their realities. And their realities could be joys as well as struggles that perhaps we need to know as administrators, as teachers, as faculty. And the pre-service teachers involved with this project, they learn more about second language acquisition and the needs of an English language learner shadowing and working with that student for 16 weeks using the photo voice methodology than they would through my seminars or reading the textbook. So that's just one example of how it can be used.
Dublin's only special interest arts and cultural radio station, Dublin City FM.
What can photo voice help us to see that other research methods cannot?
Well, I think photo voice, it provides an opportunity for the person who is behind the camera clicking on the shutter of that camera to really exhibit and display or highlight their needs, their concerns, their joys, their aspirations that we as outsiders may not be familiar with. And I think what really separates this methodology from traditional forms of research data collection methods are that it allows, again, the participants to be involved or viewed as co-researchers in this process. With a traditional form of data collection, you may or may not have a researcher who comes in and engages you in an interview or a traditional focus group or survey or questionnaire. But when that interaction ends, you leave and the researcher leaves. There is probably no partnership thereafter. If you're lucky, the researcher will bring food or have some kind of voucher or stipend for your participation. But there's no partnership thereafter. And again, with Photo Voice, what makes it unique is the participants continue to be involved even after the focus group, the interview, the initial contact ends.
So it makes more demands of participants.
Absolutely. Time is of essence. Your participants need to be available for the duration of the project, and that could be a limitation of Photo Voice when, in fact, some may not be able to put that time forward. Typically, with Photo Voice, unlike other forms of data collection, you give your participants the transcript from the dialogue. And there are dialogues that are included, both individual dialogues and group dialogues. And it's important to give them a copy of the transcript so they can read it and actually say, you know, this is what I meant to say, or I overlooked this, or in fact, this was transcribed incorrectly. So again, it gives the individuals that sense of truly being involved as a co-researcher throughout the entire process.
It's called Photo Voice. Are only still photos used, or can video be used as well?
Well, Photo Voice originated in the early 90s by Carolyn Wang and Marianne Burris from the University of Michigan. And they received a large grant to go to China and research the rural women's access to healthcare in rural Chinese areas, remote areas. And so it originally started with documentary photography, still images, and storytelling. But we have come such a long way since the 90s with technology. And so more and more studies are coming out where they are using other forms of multimedia. For example, I also use Photo Voice in my secondary pedagogy course, and I require them to document their everyday realities, their concerns as pre-service teachers and or in-service teachers. What do we need to know as teacher educators about their experiences, whether it be first year in the classroom or pre-service studying? And what I do is I have them rent flip cameras from our Teaching and Learning Center at Nevada State College. And so they have to, in fact, go out and video record footage on their experiences and or their approach or response to the class project. And what I do with this particular course is they are required to then create iMovies or movies using Windows Live Movie Maker. And then they are required to post those videos to YouTube. So it has the multimedia component where they have images and or video, and then they have the storytelling component as well. And again, it's just delivered in a different format, and it's available via YouTube for students to view and critique, and then they forward it to me for review and assessment.
And if marginalized people are being studied as part of Photo Voice, you know, whether it's in the education system or outside it, is there a risk that ethical concerns could arise in terms of their photographs being disseminated through YouTube or through other sources?
Yes, ethics typically comes up in Photo Voice discussions on many different levels. A disadvantage or a weakness of Photo Voice is that, you know, when you have individuals recording their stories, they may be fearful of who listens to that story. It could, in fact, impact their family and friends and or community. Depending on your area where you live, individuals may fear self-incrimination if they, in fact, are being recorded and it gets back to government or other policymakers within a community. And so they may censor what they, in fact, share or say. But with ethics, I typically have three forms or consent forms that individuals must sign. I have individuals sign a form to consent or agree to participate in the project, number one. Number two, they sign a consent form that allows me as faculty, as the researcher or lead, to use their photographs and their stories in publications or conferences or professional development trainings. After all, I don't own their photographs. They do. They have copyright. And then the third consent form I have them use is if they photograph somebody in the community or somebody, a person or an individual, they must then obtain that consent or we cannot use that image. Now, there are limitations to the latter, obviously. If someone is sitting on a park bench and I photograph that person and I ask for their consent thereafter, it can be potentially harmful where the individual is concerned about having his or her photograph taken and there could be some kind of confrontation. If I ask that individual to sign a consent form before I take the photograph, well, then the photograph is no longer authentic or original. It could perhaps be staged. So there are ethical issues that we need to be aware of when using PhotoVoice, and we need to continue the dialogue and have more research on the ethical issues around PhotoVoice, given the multimedia and technology that is now available today, as more and more people are putting their work online via YouTube, for example. We need to continue this dialogue around the ethical issues with multimedia.
In practice, if a participant has the copyright on the photographs, you could envisage a situation where a researcher works with the participant and spends a lot of time with them and invests a lot of time and takes a lot of photographs, and then ultimately they can't actually use the photographs. Is that a risk that you would be concerned about?
That potentially could happen. With PhotoVoice, all of my PhotoVoice studies, individuals collectively decide how many photographs they wish to choose or select to best answer or depict their response to the research question or the course assignment. So, for example, in South Africa, I gave them, at the time, 35mm cameras, and we had 24 exposure on each film, each roll of film. And so of the 24, the group decided that they only wanted to select 3 to 4 photographs from that entire roll. So if, in fact, yes, you get to the end of the project and an individual decides that he or she does not want to share that photograph as part of his or her project, hopefully of the other photographs they took for the project, they photographed, there will be others that perhaps they're willing to share. Just another unique feature of PhotoVoice that I wanted to share with you, if we have time, is the concept of having individuals display their work publicly at the end of each study. With all of my projects, I have had photo galleries or photo exhibits where the selected photographs from participants are framed and mounted and displayed in some kind of an exhibit or gallery, public exhibit or gallery, where community members, faculty, staff, family, friends are invited to view the gallery. Participants themselves extract captions from their transcript that they wish to accompany their photographs, and it truly is an empowering experience for participants. When I used it most recently with English language learners with the case study project I mentioned earlier in my second language acquisition course, we had the photo gallery on our campus, and we invited the English language learners to our college. This was the first time ever that these English language learners were on a college campus. It was very empowering. We rented a bus and chartered them and their family to the campus. We bought t-shirts with our school logos on the back that read, "I attended elementary school and college." So for them to have ownership and pride and take responsibility of their work in a public exhibit with others present is very, very empowering.
When researchers publish articles that use photo voice as an approach. Do they generally publish the photos in those articles?
I think it depends on the journal or the book. I've published several photo voice studies, and I think one editor requested a photograph. As you know, it's very expensive to print photographs these days in journals. If they're not electronic journals, the photographs could be in color, and then again, that could be a very large expense. So it varies. The author can be very descriptive in describing the photograph that participants selected. When individuals work on photo voice projects, after the individual dialogues where they do their storytelling, and there's a method, there's a process, guiding questions used to have them describe their photographs. There's a final stage of photo voice called codifying, where the individuals collectively gather or identify the issues, the theories, the themes, or the findings from all of their photographs and all of their stories. And so that actually eliminates the researcher bias, so that if one is entering into this process with, again, some kind of hidden agenda or expects certain findings from the project, the participant themselves during this codifying stage are able to identify the themes or the findings that emerged from all of their photographs and all of their stories collectively. And so they are the ones who, in fact, label a finding a finding.
When you're reading an article that has used photo voice as a methodology, how or what criteria do you use to evaluate the quality of the article and the approach?
Other work from other researchers?
Yes.
Oh, well, I guess I look at the overall development of the project. One of the things that makes photo voice is this whole idea of social justice, social action, change. What change came from the study? Were there opportunities for individuals to identify ways to bring about change? Did they, in fact, implement change? So did it get to that final level of the research process, or did it end with simply telling stories and empowering individuals to then move forward with perhaps bringing about change on their own? Or was there some kind of change agent that occurred from the project? And it doesn't have to be anything significant, a grassroots organization, you know, that is formed. It can be something minor, such as, you know, starting an after-school program to continue the dialogue with participants. Let's just say around bullying, for example. And that dialogue continues with a faculty member who is an advisor they've identified. And perhaps now they're going to move forward and identify ways to combat bullying. Now, they weren't able to get to that final point of change and reform if they weren't able to within identify their own voice, their own concerns, claim or reclaim their voice to then move forward with change. So it truly does need to occur within first before you can become a changed agent in your own community. So I guess I would say looking for that final action piece within other researchers' work.
So it seems that advocacy is kind of part of the approach, and if it is, it's a little bit different from conventional research, where you must actively look for disconfirming evidence or you look for the other side. That doesn't seem to be as key to this particular approach.
Correct. Certainly, in fact, some researchers do not view participatory action research as a sound, you know, scientific or traditional form of data collection or research methodology because of what you just mentioned, that activism piece. They view it as just being active. And so That certainly can play into things, but when done properly, again, when you are allowing individuals to illuminate or highlight their insights, their concerns, the process unfolds from there.
What other examples, apart from your own, have you seen of photo voice being applied in education settings or education contexts?
Well, apart from my own, I know that I've used it with English language learners, pre-service teachers, in-service teachers, high school students enrolled in an economics class. I've used it, as I mentioned, in South Africa with individuals living in township communities. There have been studies published using it with women around issues of health and health care. It's been used with the homeless, people with mental illnesses. It's been used with urban health advisors. It's been used with immigrants and their experiences as newly arrived individuals. It's been used with low-income individuals, at-risk students, middle school students in content areas. It's been used with alcohol and drug education, as well as adolescents who are at risk. Behaviorally, academically. It's also been used with students and individuals with special needs, autism, etc. It's been used with low-income prairie women back in the States. It's been used for online instruction. So the list goes on. It's been used with Appalachian cold field communities back home, and then refugee youth from Bosnia, are just to name a few studies that have been published recently.
And finally, Kevin, if somebody listening is interested in finding out more about photo voice, how would you recommend them to learn more about it?
Well, I would say go to any educational database and type in the keywords photo voice or documentary photography and storytelling, and you will see a number of publications that have been published in academic journals, number one. Number two, you can open any search engine and just type in the words photo voice, and you will also see a list of articles that have been published. I know that photo voice is popular in the UK. In fact, there is a whole website devoted to photo voice by researchers and I believe a nonprofit organization in the UK, so one can certainly research that as well and see what they've been doing with photo voice.
And that was Professor Kevin Graziano from Nevada State College speaking to me on his recent visit to Dublin. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on InsideEd.com or on iTunes. You can email us at InsideEducation@DublinCityFM.ie. Thanks to my guest, Kevin Graziano. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.